Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers with Teacher Hug Radio, the soundtrack to your teaching career.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
So, Hallie, welcome to the show. Really, really pleased you could do this because I know how busy you are. So welcome to Teach Hug Radio and welcome to Naylor's Natter.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Right, so what we're going to do is we're going to start off with a gentle introductory question, if we can. So if you just tell us a little bit about you, your work, and your kind of journey to this point.
I'm Halil Tamgamish. I'm the head teacher of a primary school in Leicester. This is my third year. I'm going into my third year now of headship. I feel like I've been doing it a bit longer than that, to be honest with you. And I think my white beard is starting to show that as well. I've done quite a bit of work with regards to inclusion and diversity. So they're my passions. So yeah, head teacher. I'm quite proud of that, to be honest with you.
And head teacher as well, recording this when we're just about to go back into to kind of, obviously you've been there every day, and we say this every week, you know, we've been there every single day, but it's going to be kind of a busy time. So again, we really appreciate you being here. So in terms of picking up on your story, if we can, and you've said yourself and reported that you didn't do too well in your exams, maybe first time round. So tell listeners a little bit how this started you on your journey. And I really enjoyed the story about the kind of unconditional positive regard that kind of your family showed you in regards to that. So tell listeners a little bit about that.
I've never been backwards in coming forwards with regards to how I did with my GCSEs. I failed all of them, Phil. I say it out loud now, and I still can't believe it. I failed my GCSEs. I didn't pass any of them. There's a multitude of reasons for that. I think one of them was like secondary school was a really hard place for me growing up. It wasn't the area or anything like that. Because we'll talk a bit more about where I grew up and stuff later on. But I think it was more to do with the fact that I felt, if I'm going to be completely honest, I felt othered at secondary school, more so at secondary school than I did do at primary school. And I just disengaged. You know, I didn't see myself. There was no reflection in the curriculum for me and a lot of my friends as well, to be honest with you. And there was, didn't feel represented, I suppose, I talk a lot about representation and how much it matters. So yeah, it culminated with me failing my GCSEs. And I mean, if I tell you briefly the story, so we got our results, and I was like standing around with my friends, and all my friends were opening their papers, their envelopes with their exam results in. And I just remember it so vividly. They opened theirs, and there were some people were screaming, in delight, and I had a couple of friends who were a little bit disappointed with their results. And then I opened mine, and my results were, I didn't share mine with anybody. I just said, as you do, you just tell people, yeah, I did all right. I'm quite happy. I'm quite pleased. Put them back in the envelope, put it in my back pocket. And I went to go and see my dad. Now, my dad was working in a burger bar at the time. So he'd just sold the shop. We had a kebab shop, and he just sold the shop. And he was working with a really close friend of ours in a burger bar called TJ's Burgers in Leicester. And I made my way into town, basically. I walked into town. I'd normally take a bus, but I think I needed the headspace. It was all a bit of a blur, everything was a bit slow motion. And then I made my way into town, got to the shop. My dad was I remember him flipping the burgers. And he saw me outside, And he came out. He came running out. He wanted to know how I got on. So I was leaning against one of the cars. It was the owner's car outside the shop. And he just said to me, "Oh, how did you get on?" And honestly, Phil, I'm telling you now, I'm welling up genuinely. And I looked down at my feet and I cried. I just all came out. And he knew, he was an astute man. I mean, there are certain people that have got certain things about them and traits. And my dad was no angel, don't get me wrong, but he was an incredible human being. He saw that things weren't right before I even broke, And he just said to me, he said, "Look, what are you crying for?" And I told him I failed my GCSEs, and he asked me again. He goes, "What are you crying for?" And I said, "I've let you down." I genuinely felt like I'd let him down. I'd let the family down, and he just said no. He said, "What are you going to do about it? What do you want to do next? What are you going to do?" And I said, "I want to do them again. I want to show you that I can do it." And he goes, "Right, that's it then. Wipe your eyes. You've told me what you're going to do next. Let's crack on." So I did. I was really lucky. I don't know how I did it. I blagged my way into a really decent college in Leicester. And again, it was under the premise, I had to really, put myself on the line with the principal at the time, and I told him, "Look, I promise you, I'm not gonna waste my time or your time, And yeah, I took my GCSEs and I passed them. I passed all of them. So it was almost like it was the beginning, really, of my love with education, where I felt success that I'd never felt before, and I did it in a short space of time, and I was really, really proud of myself. And and now I'm sitting here and I'm doing a show with you, Phil, talking to you as a head teacher. And it's just, it's been an incredible journey, really.
Well, it has, and we can't wait to hear more about it. And the next section of that is kind of you talk about how you grew up, and you talk about growing up on a council estate. And now, as you said there, you're the head teacher in a school on the same estate. Now, I love the way that you talk about that. I'll just share briefly. I don't do too many stories, but while we're in the spirit of sharing. So last week on Friday, I went to visit my nan. Now, the kids at school can't believe that, and obviously listeners can't see me, but they can't believe that I can have a nan who's still alive. And they're just like, that can't be possible. She was 100 last week, and she's in the last couple of weeks gone into a care home just temporarily. And she cannot wait to get back onto the council estate, where her friends are, where her family are. All the family are on the same street where they have been for generations after generations. And, we did the family tree, and it was Wigan on that street all the way through. And the way that people talk sometimes about council estate as if it's something you need to escape from, and it's something that you need to be away from. And actually, she can't wait to get back there. Mm. That's where her heart is. That's where she wants to be. And that's where the family is. So coming around to a question for you, really, is it important for all children and adults to feel they can succeed from whatever their background? And it's not about escaping from the background, but of succeeding within that.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how important it is. The estate that I grew up in, and like you say, the estate that now houses the school that I'm the head teacher of, I'm saying this, but it's a bit of a big thing, really, isn't it, Phil? I think it's just come, I talk about it, but it's a big thing, And the council estate that I grew up in, and the council estate that I'm now working for, because, it's the community, it's got a bad reputation. Because it's a council estate, it's a shame, really. I think all up and down the country, the council estates have got a really bad rep, and there is an element of self-fulfilling prophecy for me. If you keep telling somebody or a group of people that they are something, They'll believe that. It's almost like, well, you don't think I'm worth anything, so why should I bother? And Yeah. You know, regardless of where you're from or what your background is, your colour of your skin, with regards to deprivation, whatever it might be, it should never be a hindrance. And for me, going back it was like going back home. I don't think I've ever been anywhere where there's been such a strong community spirit, where people who have the least will give you the most, whether it be the last penny in their pocket, the last packet of crisps that they've got in their cupboards, to the time that they've got. And they'll share that with you regardless. Whereas, you know, let's be honest, you know, areas where they have more tend not to give as much. And they've got a bad rep. I feel for them. I feel for our area. And that's why I think it's really important that people like me and others up and down the country able to go back to their areas, the places that they grew up in, and actually make a difference and represent. I'm representing Braunston, you know, and I'm showing the children that you can be whatever you want to be. If I can stand here as a head teacher in front of all of you now, and I'll never forget that moment I told all of my kids, I said, this is my place, this is where I'm from. And I proceeded to tell them how I grew up on the estate, and you can see them all looking at each other with their mouths open, you know, like, oh my God, you know. And it's important that they feel like it's okay, you know, we can aspire to be more, and it is achievable. And you know, we've got to persevere to get to that point. But representation is really important, and that can be in any form. You know, I've got a lot of children who are, you know, who are Muslim, who feel that they're seen as well. They're represented by me because I can tell them, yeah, you know, I'll be fasting during Ramadan, and they've never been able to openly admit that they're fasting, because they feel like they're going to be treated or seen in a certain way. So I think there is a massive power in representing and also making sure that children and staff know that they can aspire to be whatever they want to be, regardless of where they're from and what their background is. So yeah, massively important to me, Phil.
Absolutely. So in terms of leadership, and you've talked about, you know, your kind of journey towards being the head teacher now, what do you say are kind of the most important characteristics of leaders? I know it's a big, big question.
Do you know what? There's been a lot of talk about leadership recently, you know, in terms of whether it's the way you look, the way you dress, you know. Me personally, you know, my top, if I was to tell you what my top thing is, I think there's got to be a level of authenticity and integrity in being a leader. And it's all about standing by your why, you know, the reason why you're doing what you're doing day in, day out, and knowing that what you're doing for the children and for the staff is the right thing to do.
Nailers, Natter, just talking to teachers.
It's easy to be swayed. You know, there are times where you think to yourself, oh, maybe I should do this, or, you know, I've heard other people doing that. But I think having that kind of like ability to stick to your why is extremely important. And it keeps you on track, you know, to be resolute. So I think that's important. And I think it's okay to show a bit of vulnerability as well. You know, we're not robots. We make mistakes. And it's okay to say, look, I've made a mistake. You know, to put your hands up and say, yeah, I've made a mistake. I've got something wrong. And this is what we're going to do to try and make it better. I'm going to learn from this and move forward from this. And we'll try and make it better for all of us. If we try to show some sort of infallibility, if we try and show that we're perfect in everything, I think that's when people start to question some of the decisions that you make, or they don't, they, you know, because ultimately trying to show this persona of perfect, you know, being perfect will ultimately show that, you know, you're not. And if we do that, then we lose our staff. We lose our children because they don't believe you. So for me, got to be authentic and also have that really solid why, you know, that integrity in terms of what you're doing, that authenticity, you know, being open, being honest. That's for me. Whether you have tattoos, absolutely non-existent as a reason why you could be a decent head teacher, or whether you've got a bald head or a beard, you know, these things are, you know, we're sidetracked sometimes by things, and I think we just need to continue to stick to the core of what a leader is and what we're doing. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And, of course, yes to the bald head and beard, of course. And, you know,
yeah, I mean, we're from the same kind of mould, you know, so it's all right, you know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But you're looking much more stylish on it than I am, Leo. Much more stylish than me. Right, so while we're going on the light-hearted section about leadership now, if people have seen Halil's social media and seen one of the pinned videos, I think it's the top of the Twitter account. It's one of my absolute favourites, this. So if you haven't seen this, then you should immediately, after listening to Teacher Hug Radio, Nailers Natter, you should immediately go and check this out. So the question now is, what do head teachers get up to in their office all day?
Phil, seriously, can I just put this? I need to say this right. Number one, okay, let's just get this sorted. Number one, right? I did that. That was at the weekend. I don't want anyone thinking that all I do is dance around when I'm meant to be working. Please. I was at work getting ready for when the children were coming back, actually. And number two, yeah, do you know what? Yeah, I do dance. I do dance around in my office. I don't care what anyone thinks, to be honest with you. You know, it's we've got to do something to keep us going, Phil. And you know, for me, I'm a man of, I was going to say many talents. No, I'm not a man of many talents. I'm one of, you know, jack of all trades. I'm not very good at anything in particular, but I can do stuff. So I can move around. I can hold some notes when I sing. Not all of them, especially the high ones. I'm awful with that. But it makes me happy. And also, I think it's really important for the kids to see that as well. So, head teachers in their office. In amongst all the coffee drinking, tea drinking, biscuit eating, meetings after meetings. Yeah, we have a little dance as well. Don't let them tell you otherwise, Phil. Don't let them tell you otherwise. You know, those head teachers are dancing in their offices and singing away. So,
well, listen.
Yeah.
Oh, you're preaching to the converted here. Don't worry about this. So you're talking to somebody who has in their office, and I know that High Noon, as he is on Twitter, will be listening to this. We have a vinyl collection in the office. We have a record player. We've gone full analog. So you can quite often on our sort of inclusion corridor hear, you know, anything from jazz to classical music to, you know, we've had a bit of Justin Timberlake in there as well. You know, we like to try and mix it up. So we know exactly what you mean, but we are nowhere near as good as dancers as you are. So if you haven't seen that video, check out that video. That is a great video. And can I also recommend other greatest hits as well? Your Gruffalo in the car is another greatest hits video. We love that one as well in this house. That is great. So do be sure, listeners, to check those out. Right, bringing it onto something slightly more serious in the sense that, obviously, we're doing a lot of stuff on social media, and all social media can be a really strong force for good, of course. But obviously, in Twitter, you know, there's a lot of discussion around different camps. And one of the things that we really try to do with this show is kind of bring people together and listen to lots of, you know, diverse opinions across all kinds of sections of the education community. So is Twitter a large enough space, a large enough space for everyone? And while we're at it as well, have you ventured into the world of Clubhouse yet?
You know what? I haven't. I think Clubhouse like a bit of an iPhone-y thing.
Yeah, I think it is. It's kind of seems to be the new thing where people can get into little groups on an iPhone, don't they, and talk about education, which is, again, you know, a nice thing. And you can actually articulate yourself, obviously, much better than you can in your character limits on Twitter.
And I've heard all about. I've actually been asked by a couple of people if I wanted to join, but unfortunately, you know, I'm not part of the Apple ecosystem. So I don't really know much about it. But do you know there are pros and cons with things like this? You know, I can only assume that it would be something like being able to set up a group on WhatsApp or something like that. That's the only way that I can kind of like envisage it looking. And there is a fear with that, I suppose. In one sense it's great because you're able to communicate with like-minded people and to discuss relevant issues for you and for them as well. And it's really empowering, I can imagine, with that, without the background noise of other people chipping in and saying what they feel like they have to say. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But there's also a negative side to it as well, I suppose. But I don't know too much about it. But my fear is, I suppose, being in a position where whatever you say is agreed by other people who agree with you all the time, and you know, all of these echo chambers and echo bubbles, and I fear that if we go down that route, then we'll only ever hear people that we want to hear, and we'll only ever hear people repeating what we want them to repeat. But I don't know too much about it. But with regards to Twitter, one of the things that really drew me to Twitter, because I think 2018 I started with Twitter, and I had no idea what it was before. I didn't really use it, wasn't really sure how to use it. I think my first ever tweet was me dancing again. Oh my God. I was doing the running man, and I got a bit of stick for it, to be honest with you, but it was a proper laugh, you know. And the thing I like about Twitter is that you're able to put things out there and for people to challenge what you think, as well as people showing you support, because there's a lot of love and support on Twitter as well. You know, I think the past few months especially have shown how much camaraderie there is. It's a strange place, isn't it? You know, you put something out on Twitter and tweets are, you know, they're not catch-alls, are they? You try your best to be as clear as possible in one tweet, but whatever you put out will always feel like someone will take offense to it, or they will point out that you've forgotten somebody from the tweet, or you've not being clear enough with what you're saying. And I do fear sometimes, you know, people just say things very openly on Twitter, and people can, we can read into things and we take it very personally, and we don't mean to try and hurt people and upset people. And I think, you know, when people, like I've done it before where I've put tweets out and I forgot, like I've put a tweet out about, you know, thanking everybody in schools, and I tried to list everybody in the school, everyone that's been working so hard to keep schools open, and I think I missed out techies, you know, the tech people that have been sorting out all the laptops and everything else, and I forgot to put them on, not because I forgot them because they're not important. It's just that, you know, when you write a list of 60 people and you just forget, and I did, and some people got quite upset. I immediately rectified it because I don't want anyone feeling upset about what I put out there. You know, it upsets me that I've upset somebody. But I think Twitter is such a place, things get magnified. You know, if that was the real world outside, it'd be, oh, God, you know, you forgot me again, have you? And it'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm really sorry, mate, you as well, of course, or whatever it might be, you know, and it's done. But because it's written, it's black and white, and it's there, and it doesn't go anywhere, it just magnifies, and it becomes quite suffocating, and it just annoys me a little bit, the fact that Twitter is, we're talking about something infinite in size, but yet people still gravitate towards other people that might annoy them or they don't agree with. And if you don't agree with things, Phil, you tend to, or if there's something in your, let's say there's a pothole in your way, you'll drive around it. If there's enough space, you drive around it. But people almost like want to go, right, I'm going to drive right over that. I want to see what the reaction's going to be. And I think, you know, Twitter's such a big place. There's no need for it, really, you know, and DMs are there. People can talk to each other if they want to say something privately. But again, you know, I'm not adverse to people, you know, calling me out on things if I've made a mistake or if I haven't said something correctly. But I just feel like, you know, we get tangled up in it a little bit too much sometimes. And it's a great place for sharing ideas and resources and supporting each other. But sometimes it can be quite a scary place to be as well, you know. I've known a few people get quite upset. I've been quite upset on there sometimes. I've put things out there, not meaningfully to hurt people. But people sometimes take things the wrong way. So, yeah, it's a strange place, Twitter. Strange place. I can understand why people are sometimes look for other areas to kind of talk to each other. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I would agree with you. You know, the amount of people that I've met, yourself included, through the channel that is Twitter has been brilliant. And the amount of professional support and help we've had has been, you know, really, really important. But in terms of, you know, kind of our journey with it, with the podcast has been, you know, we started the podcast to be an education podcast that was evidence and research based, because that's what we were doing at the time. But you said it before about echo bubbles and echo chambers, and it's no criticism of anybody that's involved in that community, because I'm still massively into that. But when you're just existing in that, you don't see the kind of wider vista of what is going on across education altogether. And somebody put, I'll probably have to cut this bit, so I'll be careful. But somebody put a tweet out about, you know, well, I don't listen to podcasters, you know, who are these podcasters that say that they know what they're doing? Now, just speaking for myself, the reason I started it is because I don't know what I'm doing. And that's after 21 years at pretty much every job there is to do in school. You know, I've done every job there is up to, you know, deputy head of school at the moment. I'm not suggesting for a minute that I know any better than anybody else, but I wanted to find out from people that might be experts in particular areas where they could help me. And if like tonight, I mean, I'm learning loads from you tonight. If I can get a little bit of something for me, then hopefully anyone who's listening can get a little bit of something for them. And you have got to signpost Paul Dix for this. You know, he's really kind of brought me out of that kind of little echo bubble, echo chamber that you talked about into a much more, you know, a wider range of people. And that's why I've brought in sort of extra presenters, because your perspective is only one lens on the world, isn't it? You know, you don't need to see absolutely. It much, much absolutely. More widely.
Nailers, Natter, just talking to teachers.
Completely agree with you, Phil. Completely agree. And the more... You know, and that's one of the great strengths of Twitter. It is lots of lenses. You know, we've got an opportunity to really like take in a breadth of people's perspectives and ideas, and the amount of times that I've been at a loss with things, school based. I mean, especially some of the head teachers that tweet. I've been on there and I've learned loads from them, you know, made me think twice about things that I've decided in my school and go, right, do I need to think slightly differently? And it is a great place. But like we say, sometimes people take it a little bit almost like too seriously, I think, sometimes. But it is the nature of the beast, I think, with Twitter, to be honest with you.
No, it is. And in terms of comments that have come out, and these are not necessarily on Twitter, I think this one I'm particularly alluding to, and we won't mention the person involved, was a Newsnight interview. So, you know, what would you say to anyone who questions the profession's commitment to children and, like you said before, and the communities?
Unless you're directly in it and you're feeling it day in, day out, I think it's very difficult for people to pass any sort of judgment, to be honest with you. Up and down the country again, and you know, there are loads of head teachers on Twitter, and senior leaders and teachers and support staff, cleaners, techies. I'm going to mention all of them now, Phil, because I don't want to get in trouble. Who have day in, day out, they have given their all to make sure that schools are safe, open, or as safe as possible, and open for our children, our most vulnerable children, on a day-to-day basis. And when you get commentators who are not in the thick of it, who have not felt what we're going through, and let's be honest, no, I don't. This has never happened before to the education system in this manner, and most likely will never happen again. We hope, but we've done this with no preparation. There's been no drill to this. We've just done it, and I think it's really important that people take a step back a little bit sometimes and have a look at what's going on before commenting on our commitment to our communities, to our children, to our staff, to our parents. And I think it's really important that we are celebrated for what we've done, and not chastised and used as a political punch bag. Phil, I mean, you know, I look back now. It's been a year we've been in this, and at every juncture, it's been a new thing. You know, one minute we're open, the next minute we're closed. The next minute we're not closed, we're actually open, but we're open for certain groups of kids. And then we're monitoring the different, the actual kind of like the COVID cases that are coming through to us. Not just happening in school time, but we're having to check things through our holidays. And the times that we need to recoup because we've been working flat out. You're definitely going back. You know, you're going back to school again. And then the next day, no, schools are not going to be open fully as they were before. I think people need to really look at the timeline and the chronology of what we've gone through, because it has been absolutely incredible. And we've got through to this point. I'd like to say we've got through the other side, but we're not there yet, and I don't want to tempt fate. But we've done such a good job, you know. And people that question what we've done need to take a look at themselves and get all the facts first before passing comment and judgment on what we've done. I don't think there's one school that's just sat back and done nothing and not sacrifice their time and their resources, let's be honest, put lives on the line as well, if we're going to talk straight and blunt, because people have. I couldn't be prouder of this profession, and to be honest with you, I will defend it to the hilt, because you know what, I've never felt anything. Like I say, head teacher for 3 years. This is my third year of being a head teacher. No, nothing could have prepared us for this. Nothing at all. But we're here, and it's just incredible. And I'm just proud to be part of something that is so resolute and so purposeful. It just upsets me a little bit when people feel like it's okay they can pass judgment on something they're not sure of, but yeah, that's just me. Sorry. Hi, I'm off my. I'm off.
No,
my
no, it's not just you. It's not just you. And no, and listen, and we absolutely agree with you. I'm sure that listeners would absolutely agree with everything that you're saying there, in terms of never have any of us been so proud to be teachers throughout everything that we've done. And it was also, you know, with your school and your community, the insinuation that particularly leaders in disadvantaged communities were in some ways not doing enough to kind of benefit those communities. And I'm sure that you can give any number of examples of times when, you know, you've had to provide services that maybe aren't there in the community, as well as and on top of everything that you're doing education-wise. You know, you think of the free school meals vouchers, you think of those, you know, the number of meetings that you have to go to for children there. You think of, you know, presumably the disproportionate numbers of key workers and vulnerable students that you know, areas like yours will have. Because absolutely, a lot of the key workers who are working in, you know, hospitals and care and supermarkets and all of these kind of things have been in school throughout this. And, you know, that's the one that really, I know a lot of people felt quite kind of hurt with more than anything, that the insinuation that school leaders in disadvantaged communities work less hard than anywhere else. And I don't think that's a fair distinction at all.
Phil, I had you say these things now and you forget all the things that you've done. You know, you're right. You know, we even just recently in the half term, I had staff members going in, getting boxes of food ready, you know, food boxes ready for our most disadvantaged families. And, you know, this is community at its best. This is people getting together and really supporting each other. And we talk about above and beyond. I don't like, you know, coining these phrases, you know, talk about non-negotiables and above and beyond and all of that. However, if there was ever an apt time to use the phrase above and beyond, it's now. And I can tell you now, it's done our relationship with our parents no end of good. They know that we're here for them. And we've supported our families in a massive way. You know, it's not just been about food and about teaching and learning. It's been about, supporting with mental health. It's been supporting with bills in the house. We've been literally, you know, directing, supporting families in such a manner, you know, an array of ways. And yeah, you know, you say that now, you're right, you know, disadvantaged, most disadvantaged, we're, you know, not, you know, not that I'm proud of it, you know, because I always make a point of mentioning it. Our area is the most disadvantaged area in the whole of Leicester and Leicestershire. And so it means a lot to me that we as a school can support our families and our community the way that we have. And we do it all the time, but it's been even more important, and we've had to go that extra step, that extra mile during this very tough time where people have been furloughed or they've lost their jobs. It's been a tough time, and I'm just glad that we've been able to support and help in the way that we have.
Yeah, you absolutely have. So, I mean, in terms of, tomorrow night, we'll be getting ready, won't we, with the kind of the Sunday night before the big comeback. So how will you feel tomorrow night, and how excited are you to have pupils back?
I don't hide it. I'm really excited about having our children back in the building. I know that there is anxiety and a bit of worry about that from people, not just, you know, in my school, but across the whole education spectrum. I know we're all, you know, we've all got that in the back of our minds, but in a weird way, it's a bit calmer. The last time we did this, it was the unknown, and we were all worried about, you know, getting all the children back in again and what that was going to look like. I mean, we worked really hard to ensure that the school was safe as it possibly could be, you know, making sure that the bubbles were the bubbles were separate and they wouldn't pop, and hand sanitizer everywhere. I mean, but it's now become the norm for us, you know, for all of us. It's not as worrying this time around because we've been through it. However, that's not to say that we haven't, you know, we still haven't got a little bit of anxiety about that. And I know our secondary school, I feel for the secondary school, secondary schools and the colleagues that are working there. I mean, seriously, you've got a lot to contend with. But again, you know that you're gonna deal with that. You're gonna work through it. But for us, I want the children back in the building. I want to hear the corridors, you know, with the children's voices and their laughter. I want to see them playing outside. I want them seeing doing their PE and, you know, keeping fit, getting healthy. And I want them to be children with other children. And it's massively important, you know, that well-being. You'll see, I don't know if you've seen, Phil, but we do like a, you know, a Braunston boogie in the morning. We go around, put a bit of music on, and we have a little dance. And it, you know, our well-being is just like a massive, massive thing for our kids and for our school. And I just want to do that without it being virtual down a screen. I want it to be with them in the building. And I know that the kids are excited to come back as well. You know, we've had a really, you know, good response from the kids knowing that they're coming back to school. So yeah, exciting. I can't wait to see them.
Naylor's Natter, just talking to teachers.
So now I'm looking forward to this section now, because we brought this in a few weeks ago, and we called it, as I mentioned before, named after the room that we're in as an office, the vinyl suite. So I think that people's musical choices can say quite a lot about, you know, them, their influences. And, you know, I have heard from listeners from a couple of weeks ago show that the number of downloads of Rocky IV and the soundtrack has increased markedly thanks to its inclusion in one of our shows a few weeks ago. So I know you're a man of taste with this musical choices. So would you be able to share the first of your tracks that say something about you? So it might be something about your beloved Leicester City. I know that, you know, having done my research beforehand, I know you like a bit of John Lennon as well. And obviously we've had that on as well. So it might be something that way. So not to put you under too much pressure, what's your first vinyl suite choice and why?
I'm going to go with Kasabian. And it's the track Fire. I'm on fire. And the reason I'm going with that is because it's played at the King Power. So when Leicester score, that's the music that you hear. It conjures up such emotion for me. You know, I'd go regularly down to the stadium and watch my beloved Leicester win, usually, although they got a bit of a hiding recently from Arsenal. But yeah, it's a big thing for me, and it's that hope, I suppose, of the dream of when we can all get back together again and celebrate together. You know, that excitement of you know, scoring a goal, that winning goal, that euphoria, and sharing it with other people. Yeah, so for me, Kasabian, and I'm on fire. That's got to be the one for me. That's number one.
And it's good that you've done that, you know, in terms of celebrating goals, because I support Wigan and we've been pioneering social distancing since about 1995 with our crowds in the 25,000 all seater. And we don't often need to have a celebratory song. Although when we did, it went viral, didn't it? Will Grigg was on fire for a bit, wasn't he? Everybody knew that one.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Right, so let's do track two then. So what is your second track and how has it influenced you in your work?
My second track, now this is going to be one for you now, right? Okay, so it's I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. It's Vanilla Ice and it's Ice Ice Baby. I don't know if you know it. Do you know it, Phil?
Listen, this is why I love this show. So you will, again, people who know me now who are listening to this will not be able to believe the fact that, and he's padding for time. Here we go.
Yes! Brilliant.
And you know why I've got it there ready to go? Because as the teachers from my school that will be listening to this, which is few and far between, to be honest, because they see enough of me, will know that that's my ringtone. So I certainly
brilliant.
Do know that's right. Yes.
Oh, my God. And literally, I had no idea. How amazing is that? We're kindred spirits, man. That's what it is.
All right, stop. Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly.
Will it ever stop?
Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. To the extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle. Dance. Crush a speaker that booms. I'm killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom. Deadly. When I play a dope melody, anything less than...
Right, so I picked that. Like I said to you, one of my first tweets way back when was me doing The Running Man. And it was to that song, you know. I was, oh God, I did that. It was just such a laugh, you know, and it was the beginning of me being a head teacher. I hadn't been a head teacher before that, you know. It was the start of my head teachership, and I hear that song and it just reminds me of walking into the, you know, into the role. And yeah, it's a positive, it's a real positive song. It conjures up great memories for me in terms of like the beginning of my role and in what I do now, and also that kind of fun element, you know, never to lose that side of what we're doing. This is a serious job, yeah. But I think it's really important that we try and keep that kind of the heart to what we do, the fun, the laughter, and that definitely conjures up some laughter for me, to be honest with you. So yeah, Ice Ice Baby, brilliant.
Great choices there. And I have been known, when we used to be able to do Nights Out, I have been known to attempt the rap to that and another sort of 90s classic of Boom Shake the Room by Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. Listen, which I definitely as a rap at my own wedding.
We're meeting up when this is all over. We're meeting up. I need to see. This needs to happen. It's got to be a live event. I want this over Zoom. Well,
I shouldn't probably admit this on national radio, but I think there is a clip of that somewhere. You know, most people when they get married, and you know, they have a wedding track, don't they, and a song that they always remember the wedding. Now, you know, I'm divorced now, so I don't want to remember it particularly. However, your wedding song. Yeah, most people have got something like, you know, Fat Larry's Band and Zoom, or, you know, Lady in Red, and I rapped Boom Shake the Room at the reception.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Well, yeah, interesting. Right, so can we top this then with our third and final vinyl sweet choice? What are we going to go for?
Right, do you know what, right? I'm going to go for something a little bit curveball with you here, right? Okay, so This song, this track, this music, I should say, is it's Turkish Cypriot. Okay, so this is from Cyprus, and it means a lot to me. I mean, massively so. I'm gonna see if I can find it, because you won't ever have heard it. Whereas if you're from Cyprus. Whether you're Greek or Turkish Cypriot, you'll know this music, and it just conjures up and takes me back to being in Cyprus. And it's been tough for everybody this during this lot, you know, COVID and all the lockdowns that we've been through, and the lack of travel, and I've not been able to go back home. You know, my grandma passed away, my dad's mum, and I wasn't able to go to her funeral. And it's been hard. I've been pining for Turkish Cypriot, or the Cyprus soil, and the sun, and the food, and the people. And this music is literally played at every wedding. It's played at every party, and it's just very it's our music. And so I mean, I'll play it to you. I'll play you a little bit. It's called Çifteteli. Okay, so I can't even tell you what that means in English. That's surreal. Çifteteli, and it's a type of dance. It's a very, if you hear the drums, it's very kind of like, it's got a beat to it, and it gets a bit quicker as it goes on. And let me see if I can make this play. Let's have a look. So, I don't know if you can hear that.
Oh yes, we can hear that. That's super.
So, every time there's a wedding, this music comes on. Soon as this comes on, everybody's up dancing, and this is my people, and this is my kind of music. And it reminds me of times where, you know, my dad, me, my sister, and my family all together, and it just means a big, it's a big deal to me. So yeah, although you won't really find it on a vinyl, Phil, it's called Chiftatilly, and you know, it's a big thing for me. So yeah, that's my third choice, my man. That's my third choice.
Nailers, Natter, just talking to teachers.
Right, Halil, it's been an absolute privilege. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you. And this is what I was talking about earlier on when people say about, you know, podcasts and how have people got the time to do this and aren't you busy enough? I feel energized. I feel, you know, like I've had a great conversation with you. I feel like I've taken loads away from it. And this has made me feel that. So it must make the Teacher Hug audience and the Nailers Natter audience feel the same way. So thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. Just to finish off, if listeners want to continue the conversation with you, and I'm sure that they will after this, where can they find a little bit more about you and your work? Where can they find you sort of online, as it were?
Oh, man. I think for me, it's mainly on Twitter. And you know, my handle's a funny one. I've got a really good friend in the trust that I work in. His name's Matt Pete, and he's head teacher at Moacre in Leicester. And he's the one that helped me set up my Twitter profile, and I just found I tried to put my name in it and try and make it work, and you know there's someone else has always stolen your name, and so you have to try and put a one in front of it or in the middle of it. So my Twitter handle is at HalilMrT1. So yeah, so that's the place that people can find me and you know. Pick faults in my tweets or whatever you want to do, that's fine. Or there's the website as well, at, you know, Braunston Community Primary School. So if you want to see what we do as a school and what our vision looks like and all of that, then, you know, we're there as well. And there's a couple of videos of me on there talking about our school as well. So yeah, that's me.
Great. And I think it's a good Twitter handle and it's a good Twitter name compared to mine, which is a previous staff code and the year of my birth, which I can't now change thanks to its universal popularity on a jingle that people sing along to.
I was going to say, actually, 1977, right? Yeah.
A good year.
Not too far away from each other.
You must be in the 80s.
Go on. What do you reckon?
I said you must be. What do I reckon? I don't know.
Yeah. 80, 85, 86? Get out of it, son. You know what? You're a charmer.
Well, you know, we try.
79, my man, 79. There's 79. Only a couple of years between us.
Well, let's just say, and I mean, you can obviously go and have a look at Halil on social media, but he's definitely aging far better than I am. He's rocking that hat whenever I see him on those pictures as well. That is a good look. That is definitely a good look. Right. Okay. Just to say thank you again. Really, really appreciate it. Great to speak to you today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for giving up your time for this as well. It was brilliant. My first interview. So, I'm just privileged. Privileged. Thank you.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.